This is Jaxian Cruiser Control, Bubble 1, to Lardozian Cruiser 8-203X. Please decrease your speed to 1.788.4 kilobonds. Thank you. Lardozian Cruiser 8-203X. Please use extra caution as you pass the Aqua construction site on the side of the Aquabahn. I repeat, proceed with caution.
George Clinton, I think, is a fucking maniac.
I was always fond of Star Trek. You know, I'm a Star Trek freak or sci-fi freak. So the next record I had to find another place that you hadn't perceived black people to be. and that was on a spaceship. So I pictured them in there leaning, you know, like it was a Cadillac, you know, sliding through space, you know, chilling, you know, having come here from the planet Sirius.
We're considered as outsiders. We're considered as people who are not part of the American experience. As a matter of fact, in the 19th century, African Americans were excluded from 4th of July celebrations. So there's always been this feeling in this country that we're aliens, that we don't belong here. There's always people who want us to go back to where we came from. I don't know where I would go. Maybe I'd go to Dublin because some of my ancestors are Irish. Or maybe I'd go to Tennessee because some of my ancestors are Cherokee. Or maybe I'd go to Yoruba land because some of my ancestors are probably from West Africa. I wouldn't know where to go. But there's always this mention that if, you know, send us back to some other place. Send us back to the planet of our origin.
I've often written that science fiction doesn't try to predict the future, but rather offers a significant distortion of the present. And what I mean, I guess, is that a lot of people, when they hear the word science fiction, the first thing they assume is that this is a story or a novel that's going to tell them what's going to happen in sometime in tomorrow or the day after. And I just don't think that that's what science fiction writers are really interested in doing. I think we sit around and we look at what we see around us and we say, you know, how could the world be different?
Back when Ronald Reagan had just become president, people were talking about winnable nuclear wars. And I thought, if people are falling for this kind of thing, there must be something basically wrong with the human species. So I thought about it, and what I wound up doing really was putting the thing that I came up with into the mouth of my main character. My aliens, I had them arrive right after a nuclear war so that I could make my point, and I had them tell my character that human beings had two characteristics that didn't work well together. One, they were intelligent, and that was good, no problem. And two, they were hierarchical. And unfortunately, the hierarchical tendencies were the older, and so sometimes the intelligence was put at the service of the hierarchical behavior.
No, we want to be free with our music and we want to take from whatever we want to take from. And I think the rebelliousness before was that, fuck everybody else, we want to take music from where we want to take it, because we can make something with it, which is a new rhythm to your ears, but you can't hear it.
I've heard jungle songs of classical music, jungle songs of bits and pieces of TV commercials, jungle songs of sounds of water running. You know, I mean, it's a true urban response in another sense of like accelerated culture as viewed through a lens of pot and LSD, which are also ways of exploring your environment too.
Every day the data thief finds new words and phrases. Today he finds the blues.
Blues came out of a depression, without doubt. It was singing about the situation, what was going on, and playing rhythms about those kind of things. And it didn't necessarily have to have too many vocals in it, or a lot of vocal to say anything. The mood of that music was blue. Its frame was sad. It made a lot of different things with certain people. And I think when that music is conceived, it doesn't really have any effect on the outside world until later on.
Last Angel was made in response to a moment in cultural studies marked by a valorization of black popular culture. In Stuart Hall's What Is This Black in Popular, in Black Popular Culture? And Derry's Theory of Afrofuturism in Black to the Future. Now in Stuart's text, popular culture is the means through which struggles are waged to make present modes of sexual, racial, ethnic beings that would otherwise have neither cultural nor political presence. The value of the marginal spaces in which black popular culture takes place is that they are locations in which difference emerges. That's the meaning that Stuart Hall gives to popular culture when he writes that it brings about the appearance of new subjects. However, these marginal spaces are neither shared spaces of the popular and the non-popular, nor spaces in which the popular is present within the non-popular, or vice versa, but are spaces solely in Stuart of the popular. This rendering of appearance basically takes place from a sense of the popular in which cultural expressions that are marginal both to black popular culture and the margins of the broader cultural mainstream are not present in Stuart's text. You could argue that these doubly marginal expressions of black popular culture are present in Stuart's text as subordinate absences in a privilege of presence, such as Derrida identifies in Western metaphysics, which serves to position presence as the meaning of being through oppositions of presence to non-presence. Stuart Hall identifies a binary role in the term or, as in either or, whose application in the phrase black or British presents a separation of racial and national identity into irreducible qualities or essences which limit the possibilities of their existing a range of modes of being. In place of the binary function of the or, Stuart offers a logic of coupling, which is a lovely phrase, a logic of coupling, whose function he identifies in the conjunctive term and. Through coupling, identity becomes a matter of creating conjunctions and chains of conjunctions. So what Stuart, what Hall thus does, he cautions against thinking of culture, or indeed of being, in binary and thus oppositional terms. Stuart identifies the value of the term and for the struggle waged through popular culture. Its conjunctive function renders identity potentially interminable, if not inexhaustible, while also evading the reduction of identity to a hierarchy of essences of race, gender, or nation. Stuart's argument suggests that conjunctive thinking could also be applied to popular as well as non-popular culture. The popular and non-popular could comprise each other. On the other hand, that application of coupling isn't present in his text. My reading of that particular text clarified the necessity of making present the non-popular within the popular in a thinking in which the conjunctive force of the and of coupling would serve to disintegrate the presumed exclusivity of the processes and practices designated by the opposition. By the opposition in Hall of the popular and the non-popular. This disintegrative service is descriptive of the task that Derrida allocates to deconstruction, of overturning and dislocating the conceptual and non-conceptual, discursive and non-discursive relations of power by which the privilege of presence is maintained. An example of this in Last Angel is the presence within the avowedly populist cosmological project of George Clinton of a thinking on interstellar human origin. On the one hand, George Clinton's thinking conformed to the function of creating the appearance of new subjects that Stuart Hall confers on popular culture. But on the other hand, Clinton's thinking follows a minor, non-populist genealogy of relations of formal discontinuity whose genus is Sun Ra and whose disseminations include the Jungle of Four Hero, the Techno of Underground Resistance, as well as One Atkins. In the founding example of Ra, George Clinton's mentor period, according to Derek May, the genealogy of Clinton's thinking is rooted neither in the experience of popular communities all popular experience, as Stuart puts it, but in discrete, singular experiences whose generic figurations produce a discontinuity of marginal musical figures which are cohered in the film. This cohering, a bringing of marginal presences and practices into diegetic proximity, was our founding intent. And it takes place through thematic couplings. I'll give you a few examples of those couplings. There's space exploration and musical genre through a sequence on Sun Ra, Clinton and Lee Perry. Comprises interviews with Ishmael Reed on Sun Ra, Corbett on Ra, Clinton and Perry, Derek May on George Clinton and Ra, and Clinton on Perry. There's the coupling of astronautical activity and space-themed music in astronaut Bernard Harris's engagement with the theme of exploration in George Clinton's Mothership Connection album as a prefiguration of a future which Harris embodies, that of black people exploring the cosmos. Another coupling, television performance and space exploration in the astronomical activity of Harris, in which is present a prefigurative advocacy of African Americans in space exploration by Nichelle Nichols in her work as an actor in the television series Star Trek and as a public advocate of African American astronautical presence at NASA. Here's another coupling, music, technology, and the body, with Derek May on the use of, in techno and Kraftwerk's idea of the man-machine, and Greg Tate and Goldie on the relation of music sampling technology to questions of memory and futurity. Mark Derry identifies as Afrofuturism specificity a speculative writing that, unmarked by racial designation, addresses African-American concerns in a contemporary, technologically defined context. Concurrent with this specificity is Afrofuturism's general designation, the racially specified practices of production particular to African-Americans, with the Central American Caribbean exception of Lee Perry, whose function is the production across artistic and cultural media of images of technology and a presence sufficiently marked by absence to necessitate the imagining of a future brought about by artificial augmentation. And that's how I understood Derry's phrase, a prosthetically advanced future. What Derry does, he brings questions of race to the digitally driven social practices and creative activities constitutive of cyberculture. Cyberculture and its literary correlate, cyberpunk, frame and thread the relations that Derry suggests between African-American expressions of futurity and science fiction. However, thinking of inclusivity informed neither by the structuring presence or absence of white European or Euro-American practitioners or conceptual models like cyberpunk that in Derry foreground white perceptions of black practice, but by the distance which separates black practitioners governed the making of Last Angel. For us, what defined the disparate exponents of black non-popular culture and the expressions of the popular in which the non-popular was present were the historical, geographical, and cultural distances that separated them. What we wanted to do was close this distance by having these exponents reflect on each other and each other's work. So the Mothership Connection functions as the clue that coheres these reflections. It's the means by which we differentiate Last Angel's engagement with Afrofuturism from Afrofuturism's engagement with black culture. So my scripts for Last Angel are nonetheless composed of citations of Derry's text, informed by this versioning of Afrofuturism. What remains of these citations in the film and nonetheless integral to this version. So we're not throwing Derry out with the bathwater, so to speak. So they're following a couple of citations from Derry and their uses in the film. There's Derry's references to Clark, to Clinton, Raab and Perry to assert an Afrofuturist continuum whose practitioners are drawn, inclusive of Perry being Caribbean, from America, and thus present Afrofuturism as a decidedly American phenomenon. In my commentary script, I contextualize the futurity represented by these musicians in a genealogy whose beginning is in Africa. The function of this genealogy was to create a departure from Afrofuturism's American continuum, for an idea of a continuum of a clandestine futurological tradition through which the passage of what a guy called Joel calls a black secret technology of sound takes place. The effect of this departure is that in contrast to the nationalist continuum present to Derry's idea of Afrofuturism, Afrofuturism in Last Angel describes a diasporic continuum. This departure marks a key aspect of Derry's theory that I decided not to cite, his sole emphasis on African-American culture. In Last Angel, African-American cultural expression comprises a component of a politicized diasporic versioning of Afrofuturism. The film's diasporic Afrofuturism thus includes the figuration of pre-colonial Africa in the screenplay around 4 minutes, 5 minutes, and through a conference use of archival film of pioneer of decolonization Kwame Nkrumah, African aspirations for a post-colonial future, and the disappointments present to its arrival. Here's another citation of Derry and how I use them in the film. There's Derry's citation through his interview with Greg Tate, of Tate's idea of the experience of the alienated African American as contiguous to science fiction's exploration of alienation. And that informed the interview scripts. But in distinction to his emphasis on African Americans in his interview in Derry's text, Greg Tate in Last Angel contends that the effects of dislocation experienced by science fiction's alienated protagonists offers a literary summation of the alienation experienced by black protagonists of the post-slavery continuum. So Greg Tate references diaspora in Derry. For the interview script with Tate, John and I wanted to make diaspora rather than nation the focus of Greg's science fictionalizing of black experience. We used his idea as the basis for reflections by cultural practitioners on themes of relations between Euro-Americans and African-Americans in our interviews with Ishmael Reed and the Euro-African slave trade in our interview with Kojo Eshin. So Greg Tate's question, where does science fiction end and black existence begin in America, also offered us the possibility of reforming this query from one of nation to one of a founding moment of engagement between diaspora and genre. And there's also Derry's observation on the significance of craft work in Afrofuturism. Derry asked cultural critic Trisha Rose to account for the popularity of black dance music of the German electronic group, and Trisha Rose identifies what she calls an understanding by African Americans of themselves as having already been robots. So Trisha's idea of a retrospective historical knowledge of figurative prosthesis informed the theme of the body and technological prosthesis in my interviews for the Data Thief's encounters with Kojo and Derek May. The section of the interview script to which Eshin responds in the film's final interview comprises, as a point of departure, a citation of Trisha Rose's idea of the laborer and musician as robots. I read Derry's text with an eye, maybe an ear also, an eye for the tear in the text, described by Derrida as the irreparable snag in writing, that dissemination, that ceaseless proliferation of meaning, rips even further. In Derry's text, Africa is the snag that a Comfrey and I used as the most productive point of departure for producing a proliferation of significations of Africa. For example, a particularly striking feature of Derry's text is the paradoxical absence of any reference to an unhyphenated Africa, both in Derry's writing and in the works and interviews he orchestrates in the name of Afrofuturism. Here's the paradox. Africa is present not within Afrofuturism, but before it, outside it, in a distance that's so remote it's beyond memory. The continent names what in Derry is located beyond memory's margin, what can't be remembered or known. Africa is present in Derry's text as the inherited memory of the location present beyond the boundaries of knowledge, of a catastrophic break with tradition, with wisdom, and thus a transmissibility. This break is replaced not by citational activities, which in Walter Benjamin constitutes the removal and repetition by the actor of a text or gesture from its initial moment of performance to another, or the writerly task of excision that informs the literary montage, but by an inability to cite. Africa in Derry is present across generations as the repetition of an absence of knowledge. In a discursive tradition, the passing of whose carriers had not precipitated a transmissible form for their knowledge, as Benjamin suggests, apart from their admission of its deeply felt lack. And you remember in the interview with Samuel Delaney, in Derry's text, what Samuel Delaney says is, and he's talking about his own genealogy here, to talk about roots in Africa was a hopeless task. He, Delaney's grandfather, was born a slave, didn't know. His parents, born here, in this country, America, didn't know. They were not allowed to know. Talk now about production and post-production, about writing and presenting and being the last agent.